Hello and welcome to the AV Forum's Movies and TV podcast for March 2024. Tonight, I'm joined by Mark Costello.
Hello, everybody.
Simon Crust.
I've got sand in my toes.
And special guest star, Tom Davis.
Ben.
Who?
Hello, everyone.
Who?
He looks familiar.
Yeah. Hello.
Our March Movies and TVs podcast continues this new format of providing a quick top 10 list of what you can watch in March, and then a deep dive into a single topic. This month, we're looking at adaptations, mostly book adaptations, I guess, but how we prefer them to be served. Do we like them efficient as a single truncated, abbreviated movie, or a multi-part movie franchise which may never get its end chapter, or a lavish TV show? Yeah, or no, Game of Thrones, or a lavish TV show which may not get a final season, or will get a poor final season, and which doesn't have the same impact as an IMAX blockbuster. We're going to look into all of those, but first, competitions. I'm scrolling through the competitions page whilst you are at the same time. And I can see Special Ops Lioness Season 1 on Blu-ray. You can get that. Cold Day at the Park on Limited Edition Blu-ray. Green Room and Possessor on Limited Edition 4K Ooh. Ultra HD box set. Oh, I want those. Maybe I can put my name down for those.
So I said they were rubbish. I wouldn't bother.
Well, one of them was rubbish.
Let's not get into it. Don't spoil our top 10 of rubbish films. you can get a KEF LSX2 LT wireless hi-fi speakers, a set of them, worth £899. £101 off 1,000. You can get a pair of brand new Q Acoustics M40 speakers worth £749, courtesy of Peter Tyson.
Price. Which is that off 1,000?
251. City of the Living Dead on limited edition 4K Ultra HD.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Or, how much is that off 1,000?
Yeah, a lot. Like, a lot. I don't even know how much prize is worth. A Valencia Tuscany XL Ultimate Luxury Onyx Cinema Seat, 2,200 value, which is minus 1,200 off of that. That's very nice. If you've got a mansion, it would be lovely in it.
Oh man, come for the reviews and stay for the mental arithmetic.
Yeah, we do good. Well, my kids do Times Table Rockstar or whatever. It's just. Yeah, it's painful. New patrons, Yoz, Callum Smith, and Anthony White. Nice. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for being new patrons. Bought us a coffee, Chojin, Aqua Deluce, and Mr. Black 79. Very mysterious. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Right.
Yes. Cheers.
Straight into our top 10. What didn't make the list really quickly, we had a much bigger list, but it kept getting pushed out because Roadhouse. What didn't make the list? Driveway Dolls. No, what happened there? And Imaginary. Well,
obviously, we know what happened there.
Yeah, we know. Yeah. Driveway Dolls was a big surprise. I'm going to update our predictive. What we've got to anticipate for 2024 with the actual reviews and the actual scores we've done, because things like Driveway Dolls, Night Swim, Ghostbusters.
whatever credibility we had was just of.
No, Dune.
Flushed.
Dune is number one.
Oh,
Dune,
well.
Dune. Yeah, we did Dune. We got one right at 20. Yeah. So, but our top 10 list does include Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire at number 10 with a 6 out of 10 from Mark, and Tom's not going to see it, and I'm waiting for digital. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, I don't know how it snuck it in, quite frankly.
Well, it's Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire.
True, so we've got to talk about it somewhere. Yes, went in yesterday. As listeners of the podcast will know, Tom and myself are huge fans of Afterlife.
Very huge, different opinions.
Huge fans of Afterlife. And let's just say neither of us are going to be very pleased with Frozen Empire as a result. yeah, although I did bet Kaz yesterday my entire year's salary from AVF that you will love it just to basically stick it up me. But anyway, yes, Frozen Empire. It's crammed far too full of ridiculous plot beats, too many characters, given random scenes just to give them something to do. It falls into all the lazy nostalgia traps that, Tom, bear with me here, that Afterlife didn't fall into. And it was really disappointing. I was having a chat just earlier today. It's, if you think about what Scream 5 and Scream 6 did, Ghostbusters have flipped it. Scream 5 did what you expect it to do. New cast, old cast, lazy nostalgia. And then by the time you get to the next one, you've got all that old crap out of the way and you can focus on the new characters. Ghostbusters have flipped that right round. They've fallen too much into let's just go full on for nostalgia porn and hope everyone's happy with it. Well, guess what? We're not. And no one's happy with it. The reviews have been scathing. And the box office will be smelly. So, yes. Done.
Oh. What were our prediction scores on that?
Real shame. I put it as a 7, so I wasn't too far off.
I think Tom had it as a 2.
He's probably right. It was just disappointing. Disappointed, especially after the last one.
Yeah, I'm particularly disappointed, but it saved me on that really expensive steelbook that I nearly clicked on. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
If you want to see Dan Aykroyd, just go and watch his Skull Vodka adverts like for 2.5 hours instead.
Just dig out your Blues Brothers Blu-ray or 4K, you know.
Yeah, or watch Ghostbusters.
We'll watch Ghostbusters.
It's too easy. It's too easy.
Tom, at number 9, we have X-Men 97.
It's funny because after you've talked about all the nostalgia traps. Oh my goodness, X-Men 97 is just pure nostalgia traps. And weirdly, I quite enjoyed it.
You hypocrite, David. Hypocrite.
I mean, I guess because it's not they're not like, it's not like a legacy sequel doing all the nostalgia. It's just a dark, like it's as if no time has passed between the final episode of the X-Men animated series from the 1990s that lots of people loved. If you watched it when you were growing up, it was one of the best cartoons on TV.
And, definitely, yeah.
They've just brought it back as if no time has passed, only it looks sharper and kind of a little too sharp, but you can't really complain about that sort of stuff too hard. It looks really nice. And essentially, everything is unchanged. The voice cast are almost exactly as they were back in the 1990s. Where possible, all the voice cast have returned. And they've just brought it back with a little bit of a twist. So Charles Xavier, it is revealed within the first seconds of the show, no spoilers here, has died.
I'm not watching it, Tom. Oh, that's it. That's it.
Ruined it. Spoiler. Ruined it for me.
So, yeah. So the X-Men team are a bit directionless, and it spends the first two episodes giving them a new direction.
Sounds a bit
form...
like us on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Reintroducing a character, and I won't, if you've seen the trailers, you probably know, but I won't go into spoilers here. If you're going to watch it, go and watch it. But I had a really enjoyable time with it. It is not perfect. It has got some really weird ideas about what like fans of this cartoon wants to see. One of them, if you're watching the video, not just the audio, you'd see in the background here, which is the delightful Gambit in like a crop top. Yeah. I mean, I laughed when I saw it, but I don't know how sincere a lot of the choices in it are, and how many of them are sort of playing into what's going to get memed. They nailed it with this one. Boy, is this ever going to get memed.
I was going to say, I reckon if Tom stood up now, we'd see that he's taking scissors to his teeth. I reckon that's why he's just sitting down. Don't be ashamed, Tom. No, you don't be ashamed.
In short, if you never watched the cartoon, or if you didn't grow up with the cartoon, you're probably not really going to get anything out of this. It was always a weird lineup for the team. It was always like an odd choice of an X-Men team. So if all you know of the X-Men really is the films, or even if you're just like into the comics, you'll get a bit out of it, I guess. But really, this is for people who grew up watching it and wanted to, you know, that one more season when they were a kid. Here it is. Enjoy. There is nothing more to it than that. But they've done it really well. So yeah.
What, 25 years later?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think, in fact, we are like 31 or 32 years since the first episode of X-Men.
How far away from 1,000?
988. There you go. My mental arithmetic is not as good.
At number 8, we have Roadhouse, which I have to say, after me and Mark got some really, really expensive 4K copies of the original Roadhouse, really expensive. It's not something we'd ever do again, Mark. We definitely wouldn't spend that kind of money on Navy SEALs. Bro. Anyway, after me and Mark got Roadhouse, and I really enjoyed revisiting that, and Mark, as you can't tell from his review of the original Roadhouse, really enjoyed revisiting that. I was not up for a remake. I like Jake Gyllenhaal. I like Doug Liman. He did Edge Tomorrow. He did the first Born. You know, he can direct, and he can direct action, but I wasn't up for this at all. And it definitely set alarm bells ringing when everyone was crying about how it didn't get a theatrical release. I was like, yeah, probably didn't deserve one. But I watched it and I enjoyed it, and I felt really guilty. And I had to tell Mark afterwards, like he was my priest. You know, I had to go.
I didn't forgive you.
Cass, yeah, I know
you're going straight to hell, man.
I know you still haven't forgiven me. Yes, but yeah, it wasn't that bad. That, you know, there are some interesting choices in it. The villains are particularly poor, but Jake Gyllenhaal's having a ball. He's quite funny. He very early on gets a knife stuck in him by someone who's angry. Doesn't flinch or do anything about it. The guy obviously responds in a particularly scared way after that, and starts rumbling off. And he's like, "Do you want your knife back?" It's that kind of humor it's going for, and Jake Gyllenhaal makes it work. I mean, he's not Patrick Swayze, and this isn't the late '80s, but it's kind of Jason Statham level of stupidity, which can be entertaining.
Kaz, can I just check? Is this a top 10?
Yeah, this is a top 10.
Are you sure?
You wait.
Right, okay.
You wait. We got Spaceman, Space Spiders next, Mark. Anyway, I think people should give Roadhouse a shot, but just be prepared for how annoying the villains can be, as is evident from the rather ridiculous thread comments that have gone on that are just about the casting choices, let's say. Go, Spaceman. Tell me, Spaceman.
Spaceman, very quickly, it's Adam Sandler does Tarkovsky. There you go. How's about that for a hot take?
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So it's Adam Sandler is a lonely spaceman stuck up on a mission to Jupiter. Has a massive existential marriage crisis, bears his soul out to a very nice and suavely talking space spider, and basically gets his life back on track. Finn.
But who does the score?
I have no idea who does the score.
Oh, come on.
But I can tell you what it's... there you go. It's Max Richter.
Max Richter. Max Richter.
And I tell you what, it's a banger. I think I put in the review that it's... Air meets M83's Oblivion score, which
he's a tremendous composer. Tremendous composer. He did like the single best moment song in piece of scoring in Shutter Island. He's a very good composer.
Yeah, listen to it. No, it's good. It's not for everyone. It's very languid. It's very slow. It's very navel gazing, but it looks amazing. It sounds amazing, and actually, Sandler's very good in it, as is Paul Dano, yeah, however you pronounce it, as Hanus. So much so that he single-handedly cured my wife of her terminal arachnophobia. So, yay, Netflix.
Okay.
Sounds deeply unpleasant.
I can't wait to watch this.
No one in it wears a crop t-shirt. So, you know, there is that.
There is that. That doesn't happen in Ferrari either. Which, a lot of feedback about how great this movie is, it's okay. it's like Michael Mann.
We're nearly halfway through the top 10.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Well, yeah, we always had that the first five were okay, and then the other five were recommendations.
Yeah,
I mean, watch Ferrari, it's on Sky. It's not hard to go and watch Ferrari on Sky, but aside from pretty good performances from Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz in the leads, I wasn't invested in the driving scenes at all. No-name actors as the drivers in perfectly fine, straight-to-streaming driving scenes. Michael Mann does a pretty good job of wrapping up an entire life in a year. So he tells like a year snapshot of Ferrari, but he somehow manages through very, very minimal flashbacks and dialogue to encompass everything around that period, decades back and decades after. I mean, he's a director who knows how to do stuff. I just didn't find it that compelling, and I certainly didn't find the race scenes up to scratch. And in comparison to Le Mans, no, nope.
Heat 2, let's go.
Yeah, nope. So the top five are all recommendations, and I'm starting with the most divisive one, because people are going to cry about it. I haven't published a review yet, but Three Body Problem, based on the acclaimed Chinese novel, which actually had its own adaptation, I think released early last year. Netflix have done this. They've done it with the creators of Game of Thrones, who for, I think, $200 million, they signed an exclusivity deal for.
But didn't you just say the Chinese have already done it?
Chinese have already done it.
How is that exclusive?
No.
Exclusive to use those guys to make a thing.
To make things, yeah. So yeah. They got the guys who did Game of Thrones. They paid $200 million for them. They stole them from Disney. They stole them from doing pretty much anything else, because I think they were going to do some Star Wars films. They were going to do some more HBO stuff. They stole them from everything 5 years ago. They haven't done anything for Netflix. And this is the thing they've been working on. And actually, it got delayed over a year because they insisted on shooting one extra scene. I have no idea what that scene is.
Best one, Kaz.
Yeah, it was. It was undoubtedly.
You'll know when you see it.
It'll be divisive, but I think this is good hard sci-fi. It's nice. It's very much unlike most anything else in this field that people watch, like Constellation, which has been a bit pony, if I'm honest, since the first few episodes. Like even Foundation, I mean, it's different. It's a different style of sci-fi, and it will be divisive. But I'm holding true to the idea that this is first season building blocks, in the same way that the guys who made Game of Thrones did with Game of Thrones season one, and in the same way that The Expanse season one rolled out. This is the kind of show where on like season three, everyone's going to be talking about it, and the people who haven't started are going to be like, what? I have to watch three seasons to catch up? But I do recommend it. It's sci-fi. It's proper good hard sci-fi. It's nice. And maths. Everything in this TV show is subtracted from 1,000. It's proper good. I gave it 8 out of 10. It's great. I also, this is another Roadhouse scenario, even more so. Guy Ritchie the Gentleman. I enjoyed the movie. Fine. It's fine. I enjoyed it. I probably would have said I preferred his nonsense with Jason Statham afterwards, but The Gentleman was fine. But when they were doing a TV show, I was like, yeah, okay. Do I have to watch it? Mark, can you review this? No, I don't watch TV.
Although, ironically, I have seen...
We're not watching it. I didn't put it in the list. You got Ghostbusters. I did not put it in the list. Yeah. But just so everyone at home knows, Mark did review TV. He did give it a 7 out of 10, which is higher than Ghostbusters and should make it the number 10 in the slot. But I'm not telling you what it is. And it's not. Gentlemen, I watched the TV show and I really enjoyed it. It's I think he only does the first couple of episodes. I think he writes a lot of it, but he only directed the first couple of episodes. But Guy Ritchie is a bit of an acquired taste, and in a TV format, he can't go full Guy Ritchie. He just clearly doesn't have the sort of energy, let's say, to keep it up for 8 episodes. And it works. Like, a little bit of Guy Ritchie every now and then, just colouring around the edges, really, really works. It's a cracking show. Really, cool. Really enjoyed it. Very funny. And if you watch the first episode, you'll know whether you're going to watch it through to the end. You know, it's very right, hit the ground running. That comes highly recommended. Oh, my Lord. Did I do all of these? All of Us Strangers is at number 3. I gave it 9 out of 10. You got to go watch it. You just got to go watch it. I don't want to tell you anything about it. I went to great lengths not to tell anyone anything about it in the review. It's a fantastic tribute to regrets and memories and past love, past experiences. I mean, it's just so fabulously done.
The trailer made me cry in the cinema, so I'm quite looking forward to going to see it.
It's that kind of movie, and it will proper stay with you afterwards. So fabulously drawn. I think a very, very few filmmakers have managed to tap and fashion this kind of emotional narrative into something. I mean, pull out all the tools in the tool set, so I'm not going to spoil how it's done, but it's very, very cleverly done. And yeah, it's a lot to talk about afterwards. Very nice. So
it would
highly
be improved by Jason Statham, though. That's what
it would not be improved by Guy Ritchie or Jason Statham at all.
You what?
Maybe Patrick Swayze.
You know what? I bet Paul Mescal would chop his t-shirt off with some scissors.
Do you know what?
I think he does.
He strikes me as the kind of chap who would, you know. And you know what? The back would make it work as well.
He rocks a hell of a tash in this. Yeah. That's on Disney. Sorry, go watch it on Disney. It's on Disney, so watch it on Disney. People who haven't seen it in cinema, people who missed it, go watch it on Disney. One of the best things on Disney right now. The other one of the best things on Disney right now is Shogun.
Yes, more TV that I watched. And for once, I'm really glad I did. Thanks, Kaz. it is the new adaptation of the James Clavell 1970s doorstop and the Richard Chamberlain classic miniseries off of the early 80s. It's just fantastic, rollicking good fun. It's warring lords in feudal Japan, but it's got a real Eastern sensibility to it. There's no pandering to Western audiences. An awful lot of it is shot like classic Japanese, Chambara films. Most of it's in the Japanese language. It's got everything. It's got religious intrigue. It's got lots of honor and lots of death. It's got gloriously viperous politicking. And it's all done, basically, Disney's thrown all the money in the world at it as well, so it looks amazing. I'm only 4 episodes in. I've got 1 left to go so far until I'm up to speed, but the cast are great. Cosmo Jarvis channeling Richard Burton is a hoot at times, but it really is Horiyuki Sanada and Anna Sawai. Am I pronouncing that right? I'm probably not pronouncing that right. Last seen in...
Monarch, huh?
In Monarch, thank you, Tom, who could see me struggling there with recollections. Those two are absolutely the standouts in it so far. But it's great TV. You know, even when the pace ebbs and flows in the narrative and you get one of those breather episodes that every show has, it's always just hooked your interest. It always just keeps you watching. I'm having a rollicking good time with it so far. So everyone get on it. That's on Disney Plus too.
It's so funny as well. Like, as bleak as it is, it's absolutely hilarious.
Some of the one-liners Jarvis is coming out with. It's just, it's glorious.
Yeah.
Sweary.
Very nice. I mean, see, these got good. This top 10 got good.
It did, all of a sudden.
Yeah, like in the top five are actually, we're recommending these things, people. Forget the early stuff where you probably press stop on the number one choice is Dune Part 2. I've seen it twice. Has everyone else seen it?
No.
Okay. I don't know what you guys are doing. Well, I'll have to see it again just to make up for it. I gave it a 10 out of 10.
There's some sand in it and some worms and stuff.
I hear it's quite good.
I absolutely loved it. And I didn't think that I would as much, even in my anticipated, where it was, I think, all of our number one choices. Mm. I didn't think I would love it as much as that. And it really did sit with me. And I went out and got the soundtrack, which I never do. And I went out and got the Ornithopter. Which I do.
True. Did you get the worm cup?
No, I didn't get the. Mm. I didn't. I don't think that was a press thing on the first thing in IMAX, unfortunately. And I missed the whole. What is it? An American thing? Do we get worm cups here? It must be an American.
No worm buckets here, I'm afraid.
No, yeah.
You have to make your own. Which I did.
Is anyone else strangely turned on by this conversation? Is it just me?
It's just you.
All this talk of worm buckets.
In the whole world, it is just you.
I need to sit down. Anyway.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. I mean, it doesn't need to. There's a review there if for some reason you don't know what we're talking about, but it's highly recommended. And it leads into our discussion, which we're going to go straight into, which is about adaptations, because it's, Dune fits the bill for all three. We're looking at how to best adapt books, maybe even comics, but basically books. So like if you have a big fat book or a series of books, I mean, that are all the same story, thinking like Hunger Games style, how do you best tackle this? Do you do a three-body problem, which is an example of a decent TV show adaptation of the first part in a several-part series of very complex books, which arguably couldn't be served by movies? Do you abbreviate it, abridge it, give us like a Dune 84 style, which is a great movie and seems to get arguably more done in its 2-hour runtime than in like 5 hours.
But it's also arguably impenetrable if you don't know the source material.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole lot of nonsense. Right? But I mean, yeah, that's all right.
Sums up Lynch's career, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's fine. I don't mind that at all. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really going for any kind of coherence. It's just definitely going for a vibe, which works. But do you do that? Do you do a Villanueva? I mean, just give us a part one and then literally stop as part one. And I don't know whether the studios are going to give you a part two or a part three or however many more we need to get this done. So it could literally end there. That's it. And I've done it really well to that point, but you'll have to make up the rest. Or do you get like a slightly lo-fi sci-fi? I mean, sci-fi, S-Y-F-Y, TV show adaptation. You know, it's... what do we think? Go on, Simon, tell me, what's your preference?
Oh,
you can have multiple choices for different ones, but what are you angling towards?
Probably all three. I mean, I guess it depends on the source material, because everything you said can be brilliant. If you look at... just picking a film at random, Lord of the Rings, three films, three books, perfectly well done.
The Hobbit?
Perfectly well done. Hobbit, one book, three films, terribly done. Awful.
Yeah.
What was the other one? TV, a TV show.
I mean, Foundation, Reacher.
So, I mean, I've only watched one season of Foundation and I found it interminably dull, and I haven't read any of the books, so I can't really quote on that. I've read a couple of the Reacher books, and the films, apart from the casting, the first film was quite good. I quite enjoyed that. really enjoyed the TV series, actually. Perhaps a bit too long, trying to pad them out a little bit too much. They could do with probably being six episodes as opposed to three episodes, eight episodes. Because those books don't have a lot in them, really.
No.
Arguably, I would say they're served better as films, condensed versions. A good screenwriter can get the best out of a source novel.
Which is what they did with the first one.
Yeah.
I think the casting is more able to be celebrated in the TV show.
Yep.
But I think the way they did the first movie is tighter and more efficient. I mean, Reacher, every novel of Reacher, he walks into town, he gets a haircut, he discovers massive conspiracy threatened by some conglomeration that's just outside town. Everyone in the town needs the help. He goes wandering around. They threaten him a bit. He doesn't back down. And then at the end, he just goes and kills them all.
Yeah.
And then he walks out of town and gets a bus out of town.
Yeah, I mean, it's very A-team, isn't it?
Yeah. Almost nothing happens in a lot of the books until like the final chapter. So how they get action into every episode of a TV show is quite remarkable sometimes. Mm. But that's not in the books. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, what about though, if they make... Let's go with June. The June movie, 84, the June two-part adaptation, the June TV show, because they did a TV show.
They did. For me, the 84 film is great, completely bonkers, but they got an awful lot in there, but it finishes far too soon. Lynch finished his... the second half of the first film, June part two is what, 2-3 hours? How long is it?
2.5 hours.
2.5. Yeah. And Lynch did it in about 2.5 minutes. Because basically the producers wanted it under 2 hours, didn't they? So, I mean, everything was cut to pieces just to get that runtime.
Montage. So all that. We need a montage.
Yeah. all that fantastic build up to just finish it in so quickly was insanity, because there is a great film in there somewhere, and I really enjoy it, actually, but I think the way to do it is the way it's been done. The TV show is too long, didn't have the budget, wasn't anywhere near as good, but these two films I think are, I don't know, they're fantastic, even though I haven't seen the second half.
You'll love it.
Tom, oh, no.
Tom, tell me.
What?
You love 84.
I do. It is a contender for my favorite film of all time.
If you are
interested in anything to do with it, I recently finished a book called A Masterpiece in Disarray, which is a huge volume chronicling the development and what a nightmare it became for David Lynch to make it. Superb, superb book. And not because it's the best film ever made. It's personally, it's just one of the films that I've seen like the most times. I love that. But I think it is a terrible example of how to adapt a book. Truly insane. Anybody else took that route, you would have them committed to an asylum. It is just nonsense. So I think Villeneuve hit the sweet spot, really, in saying this two-part, or, you know, three-part if it eventually happens. That's probably the way to go. Because the TV series as well was more comprehensive in covering the story, and equally not very good.
Just not very good, yeah.
just not very good. And in general, I'm not a massive fan of going into every single detail of the book. I've had conversations recently about the June movies, the recent ones, where you kind of come up with all of these things that the film doesn't really cover or doesn't really explain or just sort of takes for granted, like, you know, the Mentats and not being allowed to use computers and But what that comes down to is those things are not actually necessary to tell the story that the films are telling. So that's okay to, if you want those things, awesome. Watch the films and then go and read the great books that they're based on, but they don't need to be in the films. And I think exhaustively adapting things is almost universally a mistake because the mediums are just so different and the methods of storytelling are just so different. I struggle to think of many TV shows based on books that I'm like, thank God they got into the real nitty gritty of everything. I'm currently being proved wrong by Shogun, which is so good. Just so good. But again, coming back to what Simon said, Foundation, for example, really loved the book. Certainly near impossible to turn into a movie or even a couple of movies just because of the structure of the story. So you would think it would make more sense to put it as a TV show, but actually it's not worked. They've not really been able to do a decent job of translating what made the book such a spectacular hit to the TV. Now, I'm sure there's loads of examples of TV shows doing books well, but I think that they are much less numerous than examples you can point to where they have not been done particularly well.
Is Mark going to disagree on this?
I mean, I just prefer movies in general. I think that's my issue. I just
prefer, I think we all do. I think we all prefer movies, but TV has come a long way.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean it you know, and you know, TV isn't what we knew 20 years ago. The notion of a TV adaptation being like, oh well, there's no budget on this, there's no stars in this, it's going to be terrible. Now it's lavish and they throw money at it and they can actually do a pretty good job. But
The Expanse, The Expanse, they did it good. They did that good. That's books. There you go.
Well done.
Nice. Yeah, that's it. We can go. Sign off.
Do that. There you go. Lesson learned.
Yeah. Mark?
I mean, the thing is that we're talking about Dune, and obviously the best adaptation is the one we never got. It's Alejandro Jodorowsky's Dune.
Is it?
Let's be honest.
Is it really?
10 hours, Salvador Dali. Mick Jagger as Fade Ruther, I think, was the casting there. Scored by Pink Floyd and designed by H.R. Giger. Take all the money I have and will ever have. No. I think what's interesting now is you look at the three adaptations, and the three adaptations go for a different part of the book. The Lynch one basically says, look, we'll get that really strange sci-fi uncanny vibe in, and we'll shove that in there. Forget the narrative, forget the spectacle. We can't afford any of that crap. We'll just go for that really weird vibe. And it worked brilliantly. The TV show had no budget, no stars, nothing. So what did it do? It fell back on what was cheap, the script and the writing. So it shoved all that narrative and all that complexity, but it did it fairly inelegantly because it just had no money and no screen time to do it. Yet Villeneuve decides, you know what, I'm going to put big screen spectacle with, I'm going to pick a couple of the really clear humanistic themes that run throughout, and that's what I'm going to focus on. And he did, and he distilled and he cut all the crap out this side. I mean, I'm the first one, you know, to moan about in the first film, where's the Guild Navigators? No, where are they? And of course, you know, that's not what Villeneuve was hoping in on. So the three adaptations did something slightly different. And I think the beauty of where we're at now, or what I should say, is where we're at probably about 3 or 4 years ago, is that we had creators had at their disposal whichever platform or forum would suit what it is they wanted to do with their adaptation. They had the film if they wanted the hugely lavish mainstream spectacle type stuff. They had the burgeoning streaming platforms if they wanted to expand it a bit. and they had the various shades within it, whether or not you wanted to go lavish and expensive or cheap, crappy and sci-fi the other end. I think the problem we've got now is that are all the editors in the world just out of work? Because that's what it feels like. You know, I'm watching movies that feel half an hour too long. I can't remember the last time I watched a TV show that I didn't finish going, do you know what? I really enjoyed it, but it could still
could have been six episodes.
Three episodes out of it. And I think now it's almost like we're going too far the other way.
But that's to do with content, isn't it? That's to do with because a lot of that's streaming driven, and streaming services like their runtime.
Yeah, but why?
Why? Because they can pad it out one a week and then they can get subscribers for 8 weeks rather than six. Not to be mercenary about it. They like it.
No, I mean,
more minutes, it means better.
But it's back to what Tom said, which is now suddenly creators have woken up to the fact that they can literally do whatever they want. Do you know what? Stuff it. I am going to have an entire hour-long episode focusing on that three-line sort of little description on that page there, because I can, and no one's going to stop me. And I think there is something to be said about striking that balance. And it is. We can argue about which we prefer. Absolutely. You know, I'm with Tom. Probably I'm with the rest of you. I'm a movie guy. But which works and which should be used for adaptations? Well, obviously, it depends on what you want to do with your adaptation. Is the very sit on the fence answer?
Mini series, three episodes. There you go. Three or four episodes. That's the sweet spot.
Yeah, or do a movie and then split it up as director's cut in multiple episodes on TV and then.
Do a movie and then do some spin-off movies and then spin-off TV shows.
Oh my god!
Prequels, sequels.
Yeah. My daughter wanted to start the Divergent series.
Yeah,
and
disappointing.
And I was like, no. I mean, there are many reasons why you don't start that series, but the one that I had to give to her was that it doesn't end. So. You know, yeah, I don't.
It's not often I would ever say this to a loved one of any of yours, but quite frankly, they should try Twilight instead.
Oh dear!
Oh god!
What have you just said?
I'm not doing that.
Still better than Divergent.
It is.
It's no Maze Runner, but you know, it's
the first Maze Runner is quite hardcore. Anyway, I'm going slightly left field of the Twitter and YouTube responses. So the questions. It was a real hodgepodge of questions this time, so I apologise to all those who had
to try and answer the questions?
No, not at all. I didn't at all have anything to do with exactly wording these. Question one was, we all like meaty, dense stories with multiple characters from time to time. But I didn't write this. But with some movies getting longer, I didn't actually write this, but with some movies getting longer and even split over two or more installments, what's the best way to tell a lengthy cinematic story? God, that's a mouthful. Twitter says multiple films if needed. Basically, they say, it's a 72% have said, 73% have said multiple films if needed. Boom. Like 12% have said TV.
So I find that really interesting then. So why have all the naysayers, you know, sort of poured over the rotting corpse of Dead Reckoning Part One by saying, well, people didn't go because, you know, there's more films to come?
It's not an adaptation.
Yeah, I think
that's kind of not the point, though, because it's still a meaty, dense story with multiple characters, honestly.
Yeah.
Bugger off back to Arrakis, Crush, honestly.
YouTube went, always a single movie, even if it's really wrong, along is 25%, but 66% is if the story and characters benefit, then part two or part three is fine. Only 9% said move it to TV. I mean, nobody likes TVs. We did have a comment saying, I'm not sure what movies you're referring to. Yeah, please can you tell me a recent movie that falls into what your question is referring to? I should have started these questions with Dune, so that maybe people would understand it better. Just Dune. Do you prefer movie or TV adaptations? For example, Dune. Twitter says movies.
Are we just going to continue to just dead name X this whole time? They're just it's embarrassing for you, Kaz.
Like... Oh yeah, it's written. It's written on the page. Twitter. I wasn't gonna. Is it X? Should I exit? X.
Yeah.
I don't want to say X.
Yeah. No one. Twitter's no, back. That's okay. No one wants to say X.
I don't want to say. Why do I have to? Is it
why?
Twitter? Twitter
on your
says
head, on your head be it, Kaz.
Why? What is Twitter going to say about me now? I'm not on Twitter. Twitter.
No one's on Twitter. Everyone's on X.
No. Oh. Whatever suits the story gets 62% from Twitter. TV says 9%. YouTube or YT says movies all the way is 21%. Movie or TV, whichever. Who put these questions? 72% for this. These are just terrible questions. Multiple movies are great, is what all of these people on all of their social media channels, whatever latter letters in the alphabet are used to describe them.
Well, I think the key to all of this, though, is, and I think it was in that first question, isn't it, which is if the story and characters benefit, and we've touched on it already. That, you know, what
don't,
works.
Don't get on the fence again.
No, I'm not on the fence.
Don't get on the fence. This doesn't suit what you were saying. If I'm a filmmaker, I'll do whatever I like.
Oh, Kaz has had a couple of coffees today, hasn't he? No, what I was going to say is it's that, you know, the three films worked for Lord of the Rings. It didn't work for The Hobbit. And it's all back to that.
That's money making nonsense.
Of course it is.
That I mean, but that's a slightly different drive. It feels like no one in their right mind. If play it the other way around, let's say they hadn't made Lord of the Rings and they were going to adapt The Hobbit, no one would have greenlit three films off The Hobbit.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So it's purely they went, we made a billion. We've only got one more book to adapt. Make it three. So that's all that happened there. But I agree with you that people are saying it. You know, if the material warrants it, I would count the number of books first before splitting it.
I mean, the thought occurs that it's quite genre driven, isn't it? Because what we're talking about here, just sci-fi fantasy. Yeah, if we are just talking sci-fi fantasy, then I think we're all correct in everything we've said, as usual.
But yeah.
Costume dramas has just occurred to me. Costume dramas generally make a pretty rubbish film, but
Prejudice, that's pretty good.
It's okay, but it's not as good as the TV. It's not as good as the BBC series.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Witherspoon's Vanity Fair was quite good.
Fair enough, but
you know,
I'm just...
You know what? I can see that, Tom. I can see that.
I think in general... Yeah. You're going to fare better with a costume drama on TV in a multi-part, like if it's more, I don't want to say soap opera because that's kind of, I don't want to denigrate, like there's plenty of, yeah. But you know, if you're more character drama, interpersonal drama focused, then that, if you're more ideas focused, then what you want is like the idea in a couple of hours for you to sort of like sit and absorb. There you go. That's
I like
my
that.
2 cents.
I like Brilliant. That.
Put that on Twitter. Out of 1,000.
Here's a good question. Which do you think is the best adaptation of Dune?
Dune 84. We've all done that. Moving
everyone
on.
Said the latest one. 2% said Dune, the TV series.
God bless those people.
Yeah, really? That was...
I can't wait until they discover, like, other things. We can have a whale of a time.
I know. That's crazy. These are all questions that got added on. I didn't write any of these, but these are interesting questions. They're better than my questions. What's the biggest inconvenience regarding multi-film episode adaptations? And I don't know where this all came from, but they sound great. The responses are like 72%, the wait between installments. The takeaway from all of this, basically all these questions, is the wait. Nobody likes the wait. Everyone's just complaining about the wait, both on X and YT, that they're saying too long a wait between film installments.
Ooh, no. See, for me, it's that flabby storytelling that annoys the crap out of me.
The other options of flabby storytelling, laws of diminishing returns, I feel like that would have been a license revoked kind of answer. Too much narrative padding left in. Part one usually feels like an intro. I mean, it's the people just tick the first answer.
There's also like the danger that you're going to go and see part two having sort of forgotten what happened in part one. I think that's like that's tying into the long wait, isn't it?
Do we think a part of the long wait is also, do you think it'll get made? Because back in the day, and showing my age, they filmed Back to the Future Part 2 and 3 back to back. And so when you watch Back to the Future Part 2, they showed you what was going to happen in the trailer for Part 3 6 months away at the end of watching Part 2. So you not only knew you were going to get another story, but you knew they'd filmed it, then you knew when it was going to get released. It wasn't like June, it just ends. We're in the desert. Who knows what'll happen next? I mean, it wasn't like that. So I feel like maybe if they had them in the can, even if we had to wait a little bit longer for them, you know, whether it's Dead Reckoning, it's not an adaptation, or whether it's June Part 3.
You're not going to get that very much anymore because Hollywood is extremely risk averse currently.
Yeah, but isn't this better? Like, you've got all of the cast and all of the crew and everybody there. They're going to do it. There's not going to be any delays. I mean, isn't it avoiding risks? I feel like
no, it's not, because it's all about that cash outlay, isn't it? You know, if you think now that these films are going to cost, let's just say to film three films, let's just say Lord of the Rings, just for sake of sake. If you were to make Lord of the Rings now, the way they did it, three films, 10 hours worth of huge high fantasy material, the way that they did it, the companies would be having to be outlaying $1 billion. If not more.
No, I don't.
That's then. So I just think they couldn't afford to do it, even if they wanted to.
I don't think the outlays. I know what you're saying, but I think the opposite about. I mean, look at how much it cost. June 1 and 2 were what, 200 million a piece? Maybe a little bit less for part one. Maybe a little bit more for part two. Let's say that's 400 million in total to make June 1 and 2. Let's say the third one's another 200 million, 600 million, right? I don't think that they couldn't have made that for 400 million, all three parts, by doing it all at the same time. Maybe but less.
Again, they didn't know what kind of interest it was going to get when it was released, and they are not going to chance it because they just don't. They just don't at the moment, which is kind of sad, but
it's a little bit sad. It is a little. I mean, I'm very glad that movies like Dune get made, because when I go and see that in the IMAX, I'm sitting there going, my God, you know, we get 8 Transformers sequels, but we also get this. You know, I'm like so proud that someone actually stumped up the cash to make a movie this audacious.
The reception for it is exactly what you wanted the reception to be for, like, Blade Runner, the sequel to Blade Runner, which is like... Yeah. We want to prove that high concept sci-fi can look amazing and lots of people want to see it.
Yeah.
Blade Runner didn't quite make the argument that lots of people wanted to see it, but thank God this has, because now maybe there will be a little less hesitation among, like, green lighting stuff like this in the future. We'll see. I guess we'll see.
It is a we'll see thing. And it also feels like there's going to be a one a year. There's going to be like an Oppenheimer last year, and there's going to be a June this year. I'm not sure there's going to be room for a stupid number of these kinds of movies, which is what we could end up with. Anyway, that's our adaptations. And
good chat, guys. I think we solved the problem.
It was fine. It was okay. We did okay.
I think we did okay. I think we all ended up sitting on the fence with adaptations, but we all agree that, you know.
Yeah. June 84 won. I think that's what we all.
I thought he said it was Jodorowsky.
I'm a realist, Kaz. Come on.
Speaking of adaptations that we're getting, and speaking of Jodorowsky, the Incal, is that not in the works with Villeneuve? It's one of his dream projects. So Jodorowsky's graphic novel that he wrote, illustrated by Moebius, French graphic novel, super weird, super strange. is what Villeneuve said that he wants to make at some point after he's finished with Dune. So that, super exciting.
I thought he was going to do some Asimov.
Yeah, he's got lots of things on his list, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what we talked about this briefly earlier in the week was them adapting Simmons' Hyperion.
Yeah.
That's an example of where they could have gone wrong with that. Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Ridiculous notion. Here's one that never got made. They were going to adapt Dan Simmons' Hyperion and sequel book Fall of Hyperion, which are both huge epic novels, absolutely tremendous and almost impossible to adapt. And their idea was to adapt them as one movie. As one movie. And we missed out on the genius idea that was that. It would have been a fantastic trailer for a far better movie we never got.
I just Googled the Incal adaptation and I was so wrong. It's not Villeneuve. It's Taika Waititi. So,
oh dear.
Oh no. Oh no.
And on that bombshell.
Yeah, on that. we will have a whole other disc podcast for you shortly as well. So, and another movies podcast. So stay tuned. Let us know if there's anything we've not covered that you think we should check out. And that's it for the AV Forums podcast this week. My thanks to the movies team. If you enjoyed the podcast, give us a like and subscribe to the channel. Plus hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we publish our live streams, product reviews and more. If you really like the podcast, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and bookmark avforums.com for the latest reviews, news and videos. Plus, why not leave us a 5-star rating on whichever service you use, if they allow, but only if you enjoyed the show. Thank you for watching and listening, and join us for another podcast real soon.
Goodbye.